From the Opopco Studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Brandy McDonald, entertainment writer for The Oklahoman and News OK. I'm here with my colleague George Lang, and we are here to talk about this weekend's movie options. There's some good, there's some really, 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 really bad. You're gonna have to talk me through it, George. Kind of therapeutic.
She's got a couch in here.
Yeah, there may be Primal Scream later.
Yeah.
We've got the sequels. We've got all kinds of things going on. We've got four movies, and we're gonna kick it over to George to talk about Tomineta's Salvation.
That's right. Yeah. Except that. That accent that you just did, not applicable in this case.
Sort of half-heartedly. Yeah.
That's right. There's not real Schwarzenegger action in Terminator Salvation. Of course, if you've been around for the last 25 years, you kind of know the gist of this. There have been three previous films. This is the either the relaunch of the franchise, or it's the first in a new trilogy.
Or it's the downfall of McGuh.
Or the downfall of McGuh, or McG, as his family's been calling him since he was apparently an infant. So anyway, I don't know how you can call an infant
McG.
This is taking place in that future that we've been hearing about since the very beginning. It's 2018 on the West Coast, and basically humanity has been all but snuffed out by the Skynet killing machines, which overtook and ran roughshod over humanity. So at this point, John Connor is rallying the troops on the ground against these awful Skynet machines and the Terminators that are sort of working on their behalf. While the actual commanders of the resistance are sort of running things from the safety of a submarine off the coast.
Nice.
And, which is kind of
like
nice.
Like having your general right there in with you.
Yeah, it's kind of nice when you're down below the nice cool waters when everybody else is breathing in the fallout.
So, that's the way to go.
But basically, John Connor, who's played by Christian Bale this time, has both a personal and a professional stake in the success of the resistance, because he has to go in and save Kyle Reese. Okay, now we know of Kyle Reese from the first Terminator. He is John Connor's father.
Right. And he was played by Michael Bean back in 1984. I had a crush on him back in the 90s.
Oh, good for you.
And I talked about my locker, my imaginary locker with the lipstick hearts around people. Michael Bean, Carl Urban, it would all be.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
But this time around, he's played by Anton Yelchin, who's having quite a summer this summer. He was in Star Trek.
Oh,
he
yes.
played Chekhov in that, and he's playing Kyle Reese here. Good casting, by the way. I mean, he really seems to fit it. But so basically, John Connor has to ensure that Reese, who's rumbling around in the ruins of Los Angeles, is protected, made safe. It's kind of like a Saving Private Ryan in the desolate future.
Saving Private Daddy.
Yeah, exactly. So if Kyle Reese gets killed, then there's no John Connor, and the resistance can't move forward. And there you go. But one of the nice little quirks of this story is the appearance of a gentleman named Marcus Wright. He's played by Sam Worthington, a relative newcomer, but is on a real hot streak because he's also going to be in James Cameron's new film Avatar.
Right.
So he's certainly somebody to watch, but he's got a great character. Marcus Wright, the last thing he remembered was being put to death on death row in 1993. And then he wakes up, it's 2018, everything's been bombed to shreds, and he's been sort of like thrown in the middle of it. He's actually he's been helping Reese try to get away from these Skynet machines, helping to try to save a bunch of humans who have been scooped up and are being taken to San Francisco. And he's not really sure what is going on, but he's kind of been put in automatic. He's just moving forward. John Connor doesn't know if he can trust this guy. And there's a really good reason why he shouldn't trust him. I'm not going to go into that. But
he sounds suspicious right there.
A little suspicious, but you know, but it's actually a really interesting character. So the strange thing is that John Connor isn't really that central. I mean, he's kind of rallying everybody, but a lot of the focus is on Anton Yelchin and Sam Worthington here. I will say this: McGee,
Sugar Ray videos and
Smash Mouth videos
and
all of this stuff.
Angels
and then
movie.
Yeah, that's right. He debuts 9 years ago with the Charlie's Angels movie, and his previous two films are Charlie's Angels Full Throttle and We Are Marshall. So what? I went out and I actually talked to Minga a couple of weekends ago, and he was interesting. I mean, he's actually a very an unusually self-deprecating guy, and he was saying what would give filmgoers any inkling that I could do a Terminator movie, and you know what, he's absolutely right. I will say this: he has gone over. He's gone above and beyond as far as creating something that is absolutely bleak, desolate, difficult to watch because it is just so barrel through brutal. All right. I'll give him that it's definitely
so
not
the
fluffy,
shiny fun,
not shiny
post-apocalypse.
Fun mega. This is but on the other end of it, I mean, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to Terminator in that there was a certain tone that James Cameron mm-hmm. set up in the first two movies there was this undercurrent of dark humor to it, which I really loved. Okay, mm-hmm. And there's no dark humor; there's just darkness to this. And so I can't say that it's completely satisfying, but in its own way, it's oddly effective. Okay, I mean it's not Children of Men, it's not The Road, it's not on that level.
Right.
But in terms of apocalyptic, it's not that bad. So I gave it 3 stars. It's a perfectly acceptable fourth chapter in the franchise. I imagine it's going to do pretty well, and there will probably be more. So there you go.
It's a shame about the dark humor, though, because there's always sort of this sense of what in the world. I mean, because there's a sense of humor about the situation. I mean,
yes.
The situation was so crazy.
Right.
It sort of made it a little easier to buy it as these blockbusters go, because the characters sort of react to the situation like, this is the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me. You know, he's going to the phone book and killing other Sarah Connors. This is strange.
Yeah, you have to understand that if you go back and you look at the 1984 original, I mean, this was a low budget movie where Cameron, who really wasn't coming off of much at that point, was just kind of going for broke. And there was a lot of fun to be had because he was doing that. I mean, there were ridiculous scenes of the Terminator, who was played by Schwarzenegger at the time, obviously, like running over children's toys and stuff like that. I mean, it was just funny because he was so bad and so unstoppable that you had to laugh.
Yeah.
At this point, you're not laughing. You're just kind of getting through this, and so you do get that the kind of the same feeling that the characters are getting, which is there's just really no hope here. But if you're looking for bleak, Terminator Salvation's got it.
Well, if you're looking for a completely different kind of bleak,
oh, let's hear it.
I went to see Dance Flick,
mm-hmm.
And boy, the things I do. I mean, honestly.
Okay, a little background.
I've taken a bullet, and I feel like I'm still bleeding.
She did take this bullet because I was all set to go to Dance Flick, and Brandy, she thought, okay, Now, if I, you know, you look back at 2008, George took more hits than anybody
he
else
did. It was
in
sad.
Terms of bad movies, and so Brandy decided, okay, I'm going to take this. And you know, what was interesting is that Dance Flick, they screened it.
I mean, this is one of those over the top spoof films, the epic movie, scary movie, all that kind of thing, right. All those iterations. Not once have they ever been screened. So we can withhold the finger of shame. We don't have wag the finger of shame at Paramount Pictures. We were really amazed. But I have to say that probably the most redeeming quality about it is they were brave enough to screen it. I mean, that really is about the only nice thing I can say about it is that they were brave enough to screen it. So right. To reward Paramount Pictures for being this brave, I have decided that me personally, to show my appreciation, I'm going to go see Star Trek this weekend. That's a Paramount movie.
And everybody should, by the way.
And everybody should see it. So I'm going to go see Star Trek again this weekend, but I'm not going to go see Dance Flick ever again. I probably will never stop complaining about it, just so you know, George. But
her desk is right next to mine. I'll hear about it forever.
But this is, I mean, the tone is set really fast. The very first showdown, it dropped in the middle of one of these sort of urban step-down showdowns that we've had. I mean, this is really, really, really riffing off of those movies. And right. Those kind of things. And you know how she move and stomp the yard and all of these kinds of movies. Which my argument is about these movies is that they're completely over the top spoofs to the point of being ridiculous. But they always spoof things that don't need to be spoofed in the first place. I mean, what can you do to a slasher flick that a slasher flick doesn't do to itself already?
Right.
And it's like these dance movies. I mean, if you've watched these dance movies, sometimes the acting, like How She Moved, had pretty good acting. The dance sequences, no matter how interesting they look or cool they look or whatever, there is always an element of self-parody in these tough-talking hip-hop street kids who, to solve their disagreements, face off like they're about to audition for West Side Story to do a Sharks and the Jets for the 2000s. You know? I mean, it's something innately hilarious about it. So it really doesn't need for you to spoof it anyway.
I'm not going to fight you. I'm just going to dance.
Yes. But I mean, so I don't know why you need to spoof that anyway, because it's sort of intrinsically hilarious, but that's not going to stop 10 members of the Wayans family from teaming up to make Dance Flick. I counted 10. There could be more. There could be some people who are related by marriage in this. I don't know. But the tone is set really early on. You're dropped into one of these dance showdowns, and a competitor shows off his signature move, and it's him planting his head up his backside. That's the tone right there.
Wow.
And my argument is for the good of humanity, someone has got to stop the Wayans clan from procreating until they agree not to use their offspring, siblings, uncles, aunts, any other relatives to make any more bad movies.
You know that there's a back lot in like Culver City where they've got like all these test tubes, and it's just like rows upon rows of Wayanses.
Because they have the power to get to make really, really horrible movies and to get a major studio like Paramount to distribute them. And until we can figure out how to turn that power to use it for good instead of for evil, it's got to stop.
Who's the star of this movie?
Damon Wayans Jr. If that didn't just send a chill up your spine, I don't know what's gonna. Skynet machines, maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, keep in mind that it's also directed by Damian Wayans and produced by Keenan Ivory Wayans, Sean Wayans, Marlon Wayans, Craig Wayans, Damian Wayans. Most of those people appear on screen at some point, playing ridiculous characters. Like a counselor named Ms. Don't Want to Be Bothered.
That's the name.
Yay.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I'm laughing already, guys. But anyway, yeah, so it's part of this seemingly endless stream of over-the-top spoofs. It's short. That's the other good thing I can say about it. But the dearth of humor is so large that it just makes you feel like it's so much longer than 83 minutes. I feel like I'm sitting through Australia all over again. and I mean, but basically it takes this, I mean, they just plumb virtually every dance movie cliche that there is. I mean, Damon Wayans Jr., as we mentioned, stars as Thomas. He's a dancer whose crew is led by the thuggish Akon, A-Con. And who loses a big contest, and they get in debt to an obese gangster named Sugar Bear, who's played by Damon Alan Greer, wearing a fat suit that makes someone's enormous look really professional.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's like a garbage bag full of
So he basically looks like he's wearing one of those sumo suits.
Yes.
Right?
But, and he does.
Yeah.
Complete with the little, no, the head thing is not there. No, kidding. But Thomas falls in love with Megan, who's played by Shoshana Bush, who is an aspiring ballerina who's forced to move to the city after a tragedy. And Megan develops a rivalry with fellow dancer Nora, who's played by Christina Murphy, and a friendship with Thomas' sister Charity, who's played by Essence Atkins. And she's a teen mom who takes her baby everywhere and stows him in the locker when she's at school and takes him clubbing with her. And this 4-month-old infant, all I can say, that better be a weigh-ins. Because if your gene pool's that massive and you're swimming outside of it to drag some other person's poor child into this, you deserve to be punished in a really bad cosmic way. But this poor baby, I felt like that poor baby, because the baby looks confused for the whole movie. And I'm sitting here going, I'm right with you there, kid. I'm confused as to how this got made. But, yeah, it's bad. I mean, they pretty much poke fun at, besides all the dance films, Hairspray, High School Musical, Fame. And actually, there was a fairly funny bit where they parody Twilight that was actually pretty funny. And it also, the most consistent laugh is one that you feel absolutely guilty about, which is Amy Sedaris as a dance teacher, and I can't pronounce the name. It's like an curly Hugh French kind of way of pronouncing it, but it's spelled Ms. Cameltoe.
Mm.
That's the sight gag. But they cannot resist taking it too far to the point where it's wrong, and it makes you a little embarrassed to be human. And, yeah, so it's bad. Besides just a few topical jokes, or maybe one or two, the humor is squarely aimed at 9 to 13-year-old kids, and not even people of that mentality. I mean,
right.
There's a scene where, you know, Megan jumps into a pole dancing kind of thing whenever he says, dance like you did at that club. I mean, you know, and she starts pole dancing. I mean, if you've got the 9 to 13-year-old mentality and you're over that age bracket, you're just going to go watch pole dancing. You're not going to watch somebody pole dancing in this context.
Right.
So it's not even, I mean, it's only for somebody who is immature and feels like they're getting away with something to watch it.
Yeah.
But and I'm not recommending it for 9 to 13-year-old children. If you want to drop your adolescence IQ sharply, just drop an anvil on their head.
You've pretty much given up, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to kill their brain cells, I mean, just dump them off a cliff head first, because that's less painful than watching David Alan Greer break dance in a fat suit.
Oh, my gosh. You know what?
I said those words. David Alan Greer break dancing in a fat suit. Somebody wrote that down in a script,
you know,
and somebody thought that was funny.
Somebody needs to contact Michelle Gondry and get him your stat. And you know, because you need to have your mind needs to be spotless after watching this.
Eternally spotless. Eternal sunshine. It's basically a Wayans Brothers roll call, and it's not a good thing. It is. It's bad, and I don't think anyone who has eyeballs should see it, or anybody who has ears should hear it.
Well, Paramount, good on you for screening it for us, but
I'll be going to Star Trek.
Wow.
Thank you so much.
That's right. That's right. Onward
and upward.
Please
tell me Sugar is better.
Sugar is so much better.
Oh,
my
yay.
Gosh. I mean, such a ridiculous segue here. But, I mean, this is from the directors of Half Nelson, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. And so this is really the kind of I don't think I've ever seen a movie about baseball that treats the game like Sugar does. This is about a young man named Miguel Sugar Santos, who has grown up in the Dominican Republic, and you know he's spending he lives in a baseball academy, okay, and which I don't know that much about baseball, but I didn't know that these kind of things existed in the Caribbean and in Latin America, where baseball is perhaps I'd say quite a bit more popular than it is even here. This is their dream. Is to become star baseball players in the States, and so they're being taught everything about how to how to perfect their game, but also how to be in the game. They learn baseball English. You know, it's a high fly ball, home run, all of this.
There's
a teacher
the
who's teaching them baseball English. It's pretty fascinating. But Sugar. he's 20 years old. He's got this 95 mile an hour fastball. So, you know, so he's obviously a supreme talent, and he gets picked up for spring training. Goes to spring training in Phoenix, and almost immediately gets called up to a minor league in Iowa. This is where things are, this isn't the natural. This isn't about somebody who's absolutely going to be magnificent at the game. He's going to run into some problems here. And a lot of it has to do with the cultural difficulty of coming from someplace like the Dominican Republic and landing, sort of crash landing, really.
In Iowa.
Where there's a definite love of the game. I mean, he's being hosted by this farm couple who have been hosting people from his homeland for years.
That's cool.
He has some difficulty adjusting, and then starts making a name for himself because he's throwing some no hitters. And seriously developing some love from the fans, but it's still difficult because he doesn't know how to sort of navigate the culture of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. and some of the the way people think is just obviously different.
Right.
From what he's experienced his entire life, and then he finds out after a while that maybe this isn't going to be the best situation for him. His game kind of falters, that kind of thing, and so he learns how fickle this game is, and
right.
how fickle the love is that comes from these from the fans and the stands. So this is it's pretty fascinating to see how this turns out for him. This Sugar is played by a newcomer named Aljanis Perez Soto, and this guy is just an absolute natural as an actor. He's actually a baseball player.
Really?
He has a similar background, but he brings a sort of natural grace to this role. And so it's really strong, great stuff. For those of you who loved Half Nelson, which starred Ryan Gosling as a high school teacher who was at the same time that he's inspiring his students is kind of nursing a crack problem.
Yeah, sure.
All right. This was that was an amazing movie, and it had some interesting twists that you just absolutely didn't see coming. This is the same tone, it's probably not going to be around forever. Go see it. Fantastic.
Definitely. It'll be here and gone. And let's talk about, for our final film, let's talk about Ben Stiller getting slapped by a monkey. Because that's what people want. It's Night at the Museum, Battle at the Smithsonian. It is the sequel to the big kind of surprise hit mm-hmm. from a couple of years back that had Ben Stiller as a night watchman in a museum where everything comes to life. And they did not screen it here. They screened Dance Flick here, for heaven's sakes. They won't screen Night at the Museum 2. So boo hiss, finger of shame, get a grip. But we do have a review. It's from Roger Moore of the Orlando Sentinel. It was sent over the McClatchy Tribune Information Services wire. And he gives it 2.5 stars. He says there are warm moments that rise from the real history that's sort of sampled out of Night at the Museum. There's kid-friendly thrills from the special effects. There's monsters, mannequins, artifacts, and paintings that come to life. And there's also a pretty good all-star cast that a lot of laughs come out of Ben Stiller, sort of verbally sparring with Amy Adams, Jonah Hill, Hank Azaria, Robin Williams, Bill Hader of Tulsa. So we've got a lot of really strong people here. He says it's pretty excessive. It's silly as a farce. About half the time he says it really works because of that sort of comic dynamic that gets going.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that there's sometimes, like, you know, Christopher Guest, who can be hilarious, is Ivan the Terrible and has nothing to do, I mean, kind of thing. So, but the story is Ben Stiller's character, Larry, has left the job as the museum watchman, and he's gone into infomercials. But he still likes to check in on his friends, Teddy Roosevelt, who's played by Robin Williams, and Owen Wilson as the cowboy miniature guy. He learns that they're actually all going into storage because they're going to be replaced by these cool interactive holograms that apparently all the kids want. And so they're, the friends who have been brought to life by a Pharaoh's magical tablet are to be stored in this vast Smithsonian archive, where another Pharaoh is revived and hopes to use the tablet to summon an army of the dead. And he enlists people like Napoleon and Al Capone and Ivan the Terrible to help him summon this army to kind of take over. And, okay. And so Larry has to break into the Smithsonian to save the world. He said Amy Adams is wonderful. When is Amy Adams not wonderful?
She's always
wonderful. Are we allowed to name her Miss Wonderful of 2000 whatever? Because she plays the plucky and adorably sexy Amelia Earhart, is how he describes her. I didn't describe her that way. I didn't see it. So, but she resolves to help Larry on his quest, and he said everybody gets involved in Lincoln Memorial, the Thinker statue, I mean, by Rodin. Everything spills over to the Air and Space Museum. You get involved with the Tuskegee Airmen and the Wright brothers, and so I think it sounds like it's pretty packed full. But he said that there are kids movies that have kind of an odd sort of sense of history. You have, like, Bill Hader as General Custer, you know, with Moment of Doubt, and you've got Lincoln and Roosevelt and with tossing out sort of their immortal phrases, and Amelia Earhart keeps getting lost.
Okay.
He says Amy Adams is pretty much the heart and soul of the movie. He says it's very clunky, it's very stumbling, but mm-hmm. it does have its funny moments, and that with Hill and Hader in his area and Adams, they kind of pushed Ben Stiller towards something like his old A game that he used to
play
in.
Right,
right. But he says he wouldn't call it the battle an outright win, but it's at least a draw.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, if you get those kind of people together, I mean, basically we're looking at sort of the Apatow crew being brought in alongside the original Night of the Museum mm-hmm. cast, and so you end up with that kind of the same kind of dynamic, but sanitized.
Right. It sounds like it's a little overstuffed. I mean, you've got a lot of people playing a lot of parts that it sounds like a lot of people are just going to get a bit, you
right.
know, kind of to go. So it's kind of overstuffed. It's kind of overly silly. Those things, the first one was kind of about, taking an interesting concept and taking it too far. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be more of the same.
And it's taking it farther. So, yeah, so really our best bets are... Terminator Salvation, if you're into that kind of thing, you want to be deeply depressed, but on a
promising.
Thrill ride, definitely go see Sugar.
Sugar sounds promising. Night at the Museum sounds like you could take your kids to it. If you take anyone to see Van Slick and I hear about it, I promise to ring you in the next podcast.
Yep, yep. She, so, and she will.
And I will not hold back. I gave that one star for having the guests to screen it. Don't you go taking people to see
one
it.
One star. We do not take one stars lightly. Okay, that's it. I'm George Lang with Brandy McDonald, and thanks for downloading us. We'll be back next week.